Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of June, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Before we do, let me remind you that we are in an emergency pledge drive. At the moment, we are well short of the funds we need to continue to bring you all the great shows that we do. So if you can, we would love it if you would head on over to jazz901.org, hit the big red donate now button, and give generously. We would love to make, we only have another week or so to hit our goal, and we're not there. So if with your help, we can get there. Thanks. The Biden administration will ban all sales of Kaspersky antivirus software in the U.S. starting in July. According to a filing from the U.S. Department of Commerce, the U.S. believes that security software made by Moscow-based Kaspersky Lab represents a national security risk and that the Russian government could use Kaspersky software to install malware, block other security updates, and collect and weaponize the personal information of Americans, said U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo. When you think about national security, you may think about guns and tanks and missiles, said Raimondo during a press briefing. But the truth is, increasingly, it's about technology, and it's about dual-use technology, and it's about data. U.S. businesses and consumers will be blocked from buying any new software from Kaspersky starting on or around July 24th, 2024, 30 days after the restrictions are scheduled to be published in the Federal Register. Current users will still be able to download the software, resell it, and download it new updates for 100 days, which will give affected users and businesses time to find replacement software. Rebranded products that use Kaspersky software will also be affected. Companies that continue to sell Kaspersky software in the U.S. after the ban goes into effect could be subject to fines. The ban follows a two-year national security probe of Kaspersky's antivirus software by the Department of Commerce. It's being implemented using authority that the government says it was given under a National Defense Authorization Act signed during the Trump administration in 2018. For its part, Kaspersky and its representatives have always denied the U.S. government's allegations. CEO Eugene Kaspersky called the 2017 reports BS brewed on a political agenda. And the company similarly accused the FCC in 2022 of making decisions on political grounds and not based on any technical assessment of Kaspersky products. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is U.S. will ban Kaspersky AV in July. And your choices are, but I love Kaspersky. I'll change immediately. I'll change when I have to. And who uses Kaspersky anymore? So far, we've got 24 votes. And one person said, I'll change immediately. Everybody else said, who uses Kaspersky anymore?
Yeah, really.
So you need to vote in the poll, again, at soundbites.org. And then, of course, if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion or a notation or an addition or deletion to the minutes, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
I mean, Norton and McAfee, and yep, along with AVG, you know, they've been out there.
Well, what I'm afraid of is, you know, rampant xenophobia on both sides.
Right.
So now Russia and China, are they going to ban Norton and McAfee and Microsoft?
Right.
And all the U.S. companies?
Right. No, I get it. I don't, you know, no one's published proof or even real
evidence.
That there's anything going on.
The Russian government could compel Kaspersky to install software.
That's true.
So could the U.S. government.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, a lot of assumptions, but no substance behind it.
Right,
yeah.
At least that we know of.
Yeah.
And so There are a lot of people who are clearly upset about this, but really, honestly, and our poll bears this out, very few of them are American citizens. People aren't generally using Kaspersky that much anymore, comparatively.
Yeah.
Comparatively. I mean, you know, in raw numbers, it's still hundreds of thousands, if not millions, but there are, you know, hundreds of millions of people, so.
And they have one of the best labs finding new viruses and malware because there's such a big base and because so many of them are coming out of Russia.
Right, right. But, and that's a big thing. 90% of the time, when you see, oh, a new virus has been found, somewhere in that report will be Kaspersky. Kaspersky Labs. Because that's what they do. They find viruses and they then protect against them. And they're well in the tech community in terms of their ability to catch viruses. They're well thought of. Whatever else you may think of them, their ability to do the job that you're hiring them to do, they do very well. So this will be interesting. There are an awful lot of companies that do, well, that won't work. There are an awful lot of companies that do antivirus. Many of them have used Kaspersky's lists in order and what happens is, so the way most antivirus works is they publish a list of what the virus looks like. And then when you use your antivirus software, it takes that list or maybe those lists, it might use multiple lists, and checks your software against it to see if the signature that is in the list is in the software. Kaspersky has a very large database, and lots of companies use their list to check for a virus, even if it's not necessarily using their software, they're using their list. So none of this talks about, at least to this point, is do those lists go away too? Right? So, can't use Kaspersky software, the actual application that checks for antiviruses. Does this mean we also can't use the lists that come out of Kaspersky Labs? On the one hand, they could leave out a virus that the Russian government tells them to leave out. That's absolutely true. On the other hand, any company that uses multiple lists will get that signature from another list.
And according to the reports, the ban is going to be on Kaspersky antivirus software.
Exactly.
So the list doesn't count.
Well, does it? I mean,
it's not software, it's a list.
My thought is there's nobody in the government who's savvy enough technically
right.
to understand this problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's an issue that will probably come up again at some point. And we don't know what that's going to be in the future. But for now, if you are a Kaspersky user, oh, and if you had a vote that says, but I love Kaspersky, there you go. But if you are a Kaspersky user, you have until the 27th, what is it, 27th of June, July, 24th, 24th of July, to find something else.
I'm on Ars Technica, and they have a report yesterday from Kaspersky saying they're aware of the decision, does not affect the company's ability to sell and promote cyber threat intelligence offerings and or trainings.
Oh, okay.
So it is just the software.
That's all right then. None of the reports that I looked at said anything about that.
So. Updated 6/24 at 5 p.m.
Oh, there you go.
6/21 at 5 p.m. Last night at 5 p.m.
Before
the market's closed.
Before the market's closed. Exactly.
As the market's closed, yeah.
So, yeah, it seems that so then they will allow the and like we said, Kaspersky Labs has some of the best technicians around,
and they're proposing a third party audit to come in and make sure our code doesn't have anything secret,
right? But the problem that the what the government is saying is they would have to do that audit continually,
mm-hmm. Every version.
Every version, every
patch.
Every patch, every time somebody downloads it, yep. Frankly.
Yeah.
You check it today, we change it tomorrow. There'd have to be a lot of checking. So
there have been phone apps like that where it says it's, you know, it's a camera. And then 3 weeks later, it turns into spyware.
Right. And we see that a lot. Once it gets checked, in Apple checks,
yep.
Google checks, yeah. Okay, Samsung checks. But once it's checked, nobody rechecks. And that's where the issue comes in. They can make a change anytime they want, call it an update, or just simply change it.
Yeah.
Right? So here's my camera app. Apple checks it and says, oh, this is fine. And then a couple of days later, I re-upload a different version that's now got malware in it. So it's a problem, and we understand it's a problem. And Kaspersky makes lots and lots of software for just about every platform. So it's a broad-reaching decision that the government has made to not do this. We'll see.
And then what else? What other software from what other countries will they decide to ban?
Well, yeah. that's right. I mean, there's much of the software we use does not come from the United States. Much of it. Now, much of it is from our allies, Israel and France and places like that.
Israel makes one of the biggest malware, Pegasus Trojans.
Right.
But they swear they only sell it to good guys.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I swear.
Right. Ooh, my goodness. Seems my battery's down to 18%. I should probably plug it in.
Plug it in. And I'd read about a new sneaky bad guy on, they were talking about on Security Now this week. So Stack Overflow is a website where programmers go to check out code. And you know, this isn't working right. Can someone help me? Bad guys are now creating accounts, answering questions and saying, here, try this code snippet. That'll work for you. And it's malware.
Yeah.
To sneak it into their code.
To sneak it in, yep. So the supply...
And it's happened more than once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Supply chain attacks are becoming common. Some guy uploads a malicious Python library
right.
to the Python registry and calls it version 9000. So everyone's Python programs who look to see if there's a new version. Oh, version 9000. I'll download that, and it's malicious.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
got so bad that GitHub stopped accepting new submissions until they figure out how to stop it.
Yep. It's a problem that we've had for a long time. Everybody likes to be helped. Everybody needs help now and then.
Yep.
And so when somebody says, "Oh, try this, try that," that's great. And every programming language has little libraries you can add. Ruby calls them gems. But every language has some snippet, some library code that you can download and use. The problem is, unless you take the time yourself to check out what that library actually does, it's just a black box. You put data in one end, data comes out the other end, changed. You don't know what happened in the middle.
Yep.
You don't know what else it's doing. So that's, you know, if someone publishes source code and then you take that source code and compile it yourself, and before you compile it, you absolutely sit down and check every single line. Yeah. To know that it's clean.
There have been cases where Intel reference code says right in, this is reference code, do not use it, ends up in production software.
Yep.
One of my favorite stories, someone was talking about Stack Overflow. Whenever I have a problem, I'll post the problem. Then I have another account. I'll log in and answer the question wrong.
Yep.
I get more correct answers from the wrong posting than I do from the original posting. Please help.
Yeah. People won't help, but they'll complain.
And they'll correct you when you're wrong.
Correct you when you're wrong. Exactly right. Sad but true. And that's true of a lot of the internet. You know, the internet has become a
cesspool.
Cesspool is the polite word. Yes, thank you very much. I wasn't thinking of a polite
there,
word.
Yeah. Well, there are reasons you need those, but we don't want them everywhere.
Right. And the problem, of course, is that we're anonymous. You know, there are things people would not say to your face that they are perfectly willing to say online because you don't know who they are.
Perceived anonymity of the screen.
Right. And it's a problem. You know, if you can't be polite in person and if you can't be polite online, you're probably not really a polite person.
Yeah, we're looking forward to the internet, you know, the democratization of ideas. Everyone will have a voice, but now everyone has a voice.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's an issue, and I don't know quite how we deal with it. Well, we deal with it through blocks and like that.
Yeah.
You know, I've been more active on a couple of alternate social media sites, like Mastodon and Blue Sky and Counter Social, and they're much better than X at cleaning things up and keeping out the riffraff and like that. So there are places that you can be that are healthier than X or Facebook, but they're not as common yet, and they're not nearly as useful. I still use X because so many of the people I follow are only there. A number of them I see are slowly moving over to Blue Sky, but, you know, still a lot of the people that I follow are only on X. So you have to put up with the nonsense to get to the good stuff.
Well, for me, talk about hackers and everything else. The ARRL, American Radio Relay League, got, they're calling it hacked, but evidently it's ransomware, and they have been down now, I think it's a total of 90 days. That their whole database, and for folks that don't know, this is a worldwide database that ham operators use throughout the whole world, and we communicate through that. Well, they literally got owned, and the database has been down for over 90 days, and that's, you know, got people's information in there. You know, granted, you know, phone numbers if you put it in there, and that's a worldwide database.
Right.
And still haven't heard
again,
any.
No backups? I'm sorry, but yeah. Again, this is why we back up. Yeah. This is why we back up.
Well, that's why there are a lot of members, because, you know, they just hike their rates up and everything. You know, well, we got to do this and this. And it's like all of a sudden, well, wait a minute. What was I paying for if you're not doing due diligence to protect my information?
Mm-hmm.
And especially worldwide?
Yeah.
There was a city in the South. Was it Atlanta? Maybe some city got hit with a ransomware. And instead of paying the $10 million ransom, they got their city IT services and brought in an outside expert and ended up paying $25 million. In cleaning out and, you know, re-imaging all their servers. So we're, what?
Again.
Maybe, I'm guessing they bought all new computers.
Yeah, well probably.
Erase the drive, you know, nuke the drive for more. It's the only way to
pull the drive out and throw it away if you're going to spend money.
Yeah.
Yeah, or change, you know, some of your firewalls and everything else that, you know, you're evidently you've got a breach somewhere.
Somebody clicked on an email.
99% of the time, the problem is somebody clicked on an email.
Yep.
Or their password was crap.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the two number one things.
And they reused their password somewhere. There was another combined breach came out last week with 300 million unique records.
Right. When I was a systems administrator, I had a completely different machine that was dedicated to nothing but system administration. And the other machine is where I did email and everything else. And that way, the likelihood that I would be caught by any of those, and my passwords were all enormous, and therefore the likelihood that I would be caught by anything was very slim. But they were slim. And that's all it takes. But people get lazy.
Yeah.
I've got a laptop. I'll use it for everything. No. No, you do not. Mm-mm. Also, how often do you back up?
The boss lets the kid play games on the company computer.
And we've had that.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times faculty included. So I can say this now. I don't work there anymore. Faculty would bring in their laptops. I've got a virus. Yeah, you do. What happened? I don't know. Well, I see you've got World of Warcraft on here. Do you play? Oh, no, that's my kids. This is a work laptop.
You don't even give them their own account, which would help.
Yeah, right.
I had a client that got, she had to bring it in three different times, her laptop, and getting pissed off at me because, you know, she's bringing, what do I'm paying you to clean this all out? I go, well, why don't you not have your son get on there and go out and do, because what was it, Bear Share.
Bear Share. Yeah.
He was doing Bear Share and that and get downloaded. He's only doing songs in that. Yeah, and that's full of spyware and malware and everything else.
And the record companies would put stuff on there to track you down, too.
Well, we know that. Movie companies did.
Yeah.
But I used to tell people all the time, have you ever downloaded using BearShare or LimeWire or any of those, have you ever downloaded a song that didn't play? Guess what? You clicked on malware.
Yep.
You clicked on malware.
And I told her, you're going to keep bringing it in until you get your son not to use your machine and get him his own. And then that way, if he messes it up, oh, it's his problem.
That's right. That's right. But to get back to ransomware, the easiest way to fix ransomware is to have a backup of your databases. I don't understand people. A backup costs so little compared to paying for ransomware. And you've got a separate problem when it comes to your security. I get that. And you've got people's names and addresses and phone numbers and everything else in the database. This is a separate issue. The fact that it's down for 90 days could really have been simplified by saying, we wipe out the database and we put up the backup.
Yeah.
We would have been down for 90 seconds.
That's why, I mean, there are literally millions of people that are, you know, really frustrated because of the money that they paid yearly for membership, you know, and into this organization. And supposedly they're doing the, you know, their best work for all the hams and everything else. And then, you know, here's what we get.
Well, you tell them for 50 cents a person, I'll take it over for them.
Yeah.
They'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, now, it used to be when it took a while to pull the tape out of offsite storage.
Right.
You might be done in an hour.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, just like you said before, you know, take the hard drive out, you know, just put in a fresh hard drive and then start fresh. You know, I mean.
Or bring back your image, which you've saved. For the back end, I completely agree with doing that.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, that music tells us that this segment of the show is done. But don't go away. There's an hour and a half of us left here. And you should have plenty of time during this break to go online at jazz901.org and make a donation. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I was grooving. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And before we get to the phones, let me remind you that we are in an extra pledge drive. We did not make our nut this year. And so we're looking at a shortfall, and that means we need more money if we're going to continue to bring you the services and support and everything else that we have up until now. And the only way we can do that is with your support. We don't get any money from anybody. We don't get government money, state money. We don't get any of that. We get money.
Zip.
When we say public radio, we ain't kidding. So please take a moment. We get a lot of people listen to this show. And a lot of people download it every week. Many mm-hmm. hundreds of people download this show every week. If everybody just gave a little bit,
yeah,
we'd more than meet our goal. So it's up to you.
I said there's so many other shows on the
right
station too that you might like. But even if this is the only one you listen to,
right? We'd like you to help us stay on the air. We just passed our 15th anniversary. The week I was out was our 15th anniversary.
Oh, okay.
And we'd like to stay on this station, but it requires a little bit of support from the public, and that's you. So head on over to jazz901.org, click the big red Donate Now button, real tough to miss, and give what you can. We understand not everybody can and not everybody will, but if you will and you can, we would love that.
Well, the other thing, too, is the Jazz Fest just kicked off.
Right.
And they've got some amazing music going on up there. And we have a tent. And in the tent is also this donation bucket. And if everybody that goes to the Jazz Fest would just swing by and drop a buck,
we'd be well on our way.
We'd be done with this thing faster than you could spit.
We'd be well on our way.
Yeah.
So,
and it's a nice day. You know, it's not too hot. This is probably a lot less heat than we've had all week. So take advantage of it's still pleasant. Only 80 degrees out, folks. You know, you're not going to fry in the rain or sunshine right now because of the clouds, but it's a pleasant 80 degrees. Go down there and hear some great music.
And there on the jazz tent is on Gibbs Street, just outside Kilbourne Hall.
Yep. All right, and while you're doing that, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Mark from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Mark?
Having kind of multiple issues, one issue kind of led to the second issue, in that all of a sudden on my iPhone, Norton 360 was popping up messages saying my home Wi-Fi has been compromised, so it's turning on VPN. And there's another one that was also something you drill down, it has something like there's like SSL decryption going on. That's the basic message there. But sort of a bigger issue, I think that one there, I think, is just something weird with Norton 360. But the bigger issue I'm having right now, I have a Orbi router, is my home Wi-Fi. So I started poking around in that, trying to see what might be going on. And I tried to turn on always use HTTPS. And when I turned that on, all of a sudden, I cannot log into the router anymore. It's giving me these weird messages. I can get into it now from Firefox, right? But if I use Edge or Chrome, it won't connect with Edge or Chrome anymore.
The router may not support HTTPS. That's the danger of turning on always use HTTPS.
Yeah, but why we get this was kind of confusing because the router itself had the option to turn on HTTPS.
What error message do you get from Chrome or Internet Explorer?
Hang on, I got that here. It's getting an ERL. I get two different ones. One is an ERL underscore SSL underscore key underscore usage underscore incompatible. That's the one that comes in. Another one comes in. Hang on, let me get that. I have them up on three things. Actually, let me try to log in right now. Using Chrome, or using Edge, I should say.
So key incompatible is a different issue. Let's see. A self-signed certificate somewhere. So
exactly.
What what programs like Norton 360 and other more aggressive security software do is they create their own self-signed security certificate so they can break into and look at all of your encrypted traffic when it goes out over the internet. And it sounds like Edge is doing the right thing by telling you there's a problem with the SSL cert. You're trying to go to, you know, Ford.com and the security certificate is saying Norton something instead of Ford something. And sometimes what you have to do is update the SSL certificates in your browser. That's why it works in one browser and not another browser. And Chrome and Edge are both based on the same Chromium, so it makes sense that's why it doesn't work.
Right.
All right. So, well, which cert do I set up? I mean, do I generate a cert? I think I did that already. Kind of, how do I generate a cert, right? But then, do I just load the cert into the browser?
It's generally not something you can do. The browser has to have the latest certs.
I don't have an Orbi router at the moment, so I can't tell you how to do this. But there should be a way in the Orbi router to generate a cert.
Yeah, so I was kind of poking around in that. I didn't find that. So I was kind of thinking it had to happen.
Right. So once you've generated the cert, then you need to go into both Chrome and Edge and tell it to forget the old cert.
Got it. Yeah, okay.
Once it's done that, well, so first create the new cert. And, well, you may have already done that because Firefox can find and use your Orbi, correct?
Yeah, it can. It does not have any problem at all.
I think one of the browsers uses their own cert list and one uses the Windows cert list.
Right, but you should be able to. What'll happen is when you go to a site that's not on the cert list, just say, do you want to verify this? Is this okay? And you say yes, and then it adds it to the certificate. But you've already got a certificate for it that isn't right. So you need to so you can skip the first step. You've already created the cert, I think. And the thing to do is to go into both Edge and Chrome and find this, and you can search for certificates. Find the certificate for your Orbi router and delete it. Then go to the Orbi router and it'll say, well, this is new. Do you trust this? Yes, I do. Okay, you're in.
Yeah.
I'm seeing things on the Netgear forum saying there is no fix. Use a different browser.
Well, try what I told you. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
And backing up half a step, I really don't like the idea of these antivirus software breaking into my secure connections to my bank and whatnot. On the off chance that there's already malware on my computer that it should have already found.
Mm-hmm.
And so
go ahead.
Yes, I don't like installing any of those types of things myself. I let my browser encrypt the data before it goes over the internet, and then the server at the other end decrypts it so it can read it.
Yeah, because I did a whole bunch of going through forums and stuff on that same thing, the issue with the Orbi router, and it said, you know, use a different browser, and that's kind of one, they said, oh, try Firefox, and that is finally how I was able to get into the router again.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Was through Firefox, right?
Right. So if your Orbi is in the AC series, there's no patch. Orbi apparently doesn't care about the AC series.
Yeah, that's an RB. It's RB80 or something.
The RB may have a patch. So the first thing you should do is check to see if there's an update to the firmware.
Yeah, I think I did. I just did that. I think, you know, I have it on auto update firmware setting to just always, you know, download an update on the firmware if it's not there. I haven't manually checked for an update yet, though, so I should do that next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check. Yeah.
Definitely.
But on the sort of the backups or how the whole thing started, have you guys heard of this Norton 360? There's also lots of stuff saying people are seeing this come up all of a sudden on their home networks, and it doesn't appear to be any real explanation other than I think one said that, oh, it's because Norton is detecting a unsigned file trying to be uploaded. So, I mean, how would it know that, though, too? Like, how would it know what was trying to be uploaded through the routers? What kind of got me kind of questioning what's going on.
Because one of the features is it breaks into and monitors every bit of traffic going out of your computer. And part of the problem is when there's, for example, a system update, things change a little bit, and then Norton doesn't know how to read them, so it panics. We sometimes call them overly aggressive in their answers until Norton gets updated to understand the new way thing that the OS fixed. So this may have started happening on the iPhone with the 17.5.1 patch that came out a week or two ago.
That could be, because it really, you know, I got a new iPhone, too. I just went to have a 15 Max, is what I'm at now. And so kind of shortly after that is when this started happening.
Yeah. The other problem is that there's been a huge surge in fake Norton and McAfee notifications that look like it's a real notification popping up on screen, but it's not coming from the place it says it's coming from. And working backwards, what we've seen happen is if you let go to a website that has news, that website can ask if you want to get notified of breaking news stories. If there happens to be a malicious ad on that website, which is how most malware gets around these days, that malicious ad can say the same thing. Hey, do you want to be notified of breaking news? And you say yes. And what it really does is then starts notifying you of fake messages,
right?
Trying to trick you into renewing your subscription or, you know, calling tech support because something bad has happened.
Well, that's like that one that I got last week.
Yeah.
It had an attachment, but where I can feel safe in opening attachments is I wind up, I've got a computer that's not hooked up to the internet. So I can, you know, but I can see my emails and I can go over and drop it there, open it, because it's not connected to any internet. And I viewed it, and sure enough, it was an ad saying, oh, you've just purchased this Norton 360 and all this other stuff, and you're going to be billed like $398. Call this number if you didn't do it. That's their hook.
Yeah.
What they want you to do is...
Yep. And I'm seeing on Norton's support community forums, going back several years, false home Wi-Fi compromised every time a new iOS comes out.
Yeah. Also, are you using the Armor trial with the new Orbi software?
Actually, that's part of also what I did to try and maybe get more information what's going on. I actually the trial or whatever, you know, subscription on it.
Yep.
So I did that after in response to what I've been seeing, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I was getting those messages prior to Armor being turned on.
Oh, okay. Then what I would do first is check to see if there's an update for Orbi.
All right.
Okie doke. Yeah.
Okie doke. That's good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks.
And I don't know if, well, I personally don't run third party AV on my Apple devices. I let the Apple stuff run.
Sure.
Because one, I don't want to pay for any.
Well, yes, I understand.
But it always seems to cause more problems than it finds with either fake, well, not fake, overly aggressive notifications. You know, I join an open Wi-Fi. Ah!
Yeah.
I know I joined an open Wi-Fi because there was no padlock on it.
Right. And I get it, but you should be able to, you know, say, I know what I'm doing. Turn off these notices.
Right.
And
which you can, you can block notifications for Norton, but then that why have it installed if you're not going to let it notify you of anything?
Right. Well, that's why there should be an expert mode.
Yeah.
Where you could say, I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone unless it's important.
And for the longest time, Norton was always getting in trouble for hogging your system down.
Well, there's that.
They were notorious. Yeah. They had to do a rebuild on it because it was people were dumping it left and right because of the
every time
way it slowed down the machine.
Every time you
crawl.
Open a file, Norton scans inside of it. Anytime you send a packet out to the internet or receive a packet from the internet, it scans the whole thing. So yeah, it can find things, but at what cost?
Yeah. Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. What's up, Jim?
Have you fellows ever run into a hack having to do with PayPal? PayPal sent me a message, supposedly from their customer service, that there was a problem with my account.
Yeah, it didn't come from PayPal. It was spoofed.
Yeah.
That's very common.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of those.
Dave was talking about earlier, where he got a notice about here's a bill, and it didn't come from the company it said it did.
Yeah, I am a PayPal user, and I see them constantly.
Even if you're not a PayPal user, they send a billion messages out.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. Trying to hit on that one person.
Right. Yeah. And so what you do is whenever you see one of these, you log into PayPal yourself, not through a link in the email, but directly yourself. And I'll guarantee you, you won't see a notice.
And sometimes if in that message, if you right-click on the sender's name or it said PayPal, it'll probably say something like gobbledygook.ru because it didn't really come from PayPal.
Yeah. Generally speaking, when you get an email, there's two different fields for from. There's the field you see.
Steve Ray.
Yeah. Steve Ray. Yeah. And then there's the field where it really comes from. Steve@ray.ru.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not the real Steve Ray.
Yeah.
In almost every email, you can, I sometimes just hover your mouse over the from field and it'll tell you where it's really from, or there's 50 different ways it can happen, but you should be in any email able to see where it really came from. And if it doesn't say PayPal.com, if it doesn't only say PayPal.com,
it
could be PayPal.com.ru, which is Russia.
Or CN or...
Yeah.
Yeah, CN for China or wherever it's from.
Yeah.
That's why I still love to this day that movie Beekeeper. If you want to see a good movie, and it's true, I mean, what he portrays is happening in the U.S. and all over. People are getting scammed daily.
Yeah.
Out of thousands of dollars because they prey on the older folks thinking that they've been hacked and, we can help you and do this and this, and they lose thousands of dollars. Thousands.
Right. So, Jim, generally speaking, when you see something like that, log into PayPal from a link you already know is right.
Yep. Type it in yourself.
You type it in yourself, PayPal.com, or go to PayPal.com and make a bookmark. And then anytime you get a message like that, log into PayPal. If it's real, trust me, they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if it's not, just throw the mail away.
Their customer service is good, too.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you can call PayPal themselves, the actual number. Not going to off this email or anything else. You sign in, you go into your PayPal account, and you can contact them if you want to talk to a live person. And they'll gladly talk to you because I've had a couple disputes, and they were able to take care of it right away.
Yeah, they're very good.
We had
Is that clear, Jim?
Yes, I was not aware of the frequency that this stuff happened.
Constantly.
Daily. No, I'll say hourly.
Yeah. They send out millions of these, Jim, because they only need to hit one.
Yeah.
Right? Sending email is free.
Because they probably stole someone else's email account.
Right. So they send out a million of these. One person says, oh, my gosh, I gotta pay them.
Yeah.
And they win. So, yeah, it's a shotgun method. Don't get hit by the buckshot.
Very good, fellas. Thanks for your help.
Thank you, Jim.
Yep. Bye bye.
Yep. Sorry.
I'm going to finish with him. Chris Horn chimed in on my chat.
At least somebody says he's Chris Horn.
Yeah. He has very strong feelings about Norton AV. They're doing a man in the middle attack.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Technically, that's how bad guys intercept everything you're doing.
He's not wrong with that. He's not wrong about that at all. Yep.
Yeah, so he's that might be him on the phone now calling in. But yeah, so it's there goes that camera.
Yeah.
So everyone watching.
Somebody
everyone
just
watching
better
the video,
be taking a Dramamine on the video feeds. Okay. We're having
that's
issue.
The part that's not supposed to come, and now I'm not the other one.
Now he's not the other one. All right. While he reconfigures all the cameras, well done, Dave.
Thank you.
We'll talk to Jay from Rochester, New York.
Well, it's like we got such tons of space in this place.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll talk to Jay from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jay?
Hey, it's actually Jerry.
It's actually Jerry.
Yeah.
Starts with a J.
He's a very G.
His starts with a G. Oh, what's up, Jerry?
That's the other thing. You try to hear on a phone with hearing aids with two other guys right there in your face listening to.
I hear that.
Dave has to whisper at this end because there's a microphone in front of him. But
yeah,
but you don't have to whisper at the other end. So what's up, Jerry?
Oh, okay. Well, this is probably a very simple problem. Sometimes I get intimidated by you guys because you know so much. I've been trying several times now to get my printer to print. I try to print, for example, an email that's important to me, and it says printer offline. So I downloaded, or I should say printed out, a lot of stuff from HP. I have the HP tank, I've tried to follow all the stuff that they've talked of, that's written, I should say, and I still come up with the printer offline.
Well,
I go check it. Go ahead.
I would say the printer offline means that the computer can't see it.
Is it wired or wireless?
Or USB?
Wireless.
Okay.
Using my laptop.
The first thing you have to check is on the printer itself, is it still connected to the Wi-Fi? Most printers will have a little light when the Wi-Fi is on and working.
Yeah, the light is on. It's blue.
Okay.
Well, it may see the wireless and not be on the right network. When you set it up, does your network have a password?
You mean the Wi-Fi password?
Yes. Did you put that into
the printer?
The printer.
Did it work before?
No, I haven't had it.
The brand new. Right. So, yeah, that could be it. The printer isn't connected to the Wi-Fi completely.
Right.
And so the computer can't see it.
Just like your computer, you need to put in the password to connect it to Wi-Fi. So on the front of the printer, which probably has a screen, I don't have a tank, but it probably has a screen. One of the things will be Wi-Fi, and it'll show you a list of all the Wi-Fis that it sees.
There's usually something called a setup wizard.
Right. You pick the one that is yours, and it will ask you to put in the password. You put in that password. And then it will actually connect to your network, and you should be able to print.
Now, on the printers that don't have a screen, you almost always have to plug it in with USB first, run the printer setup software from the printer company, so then the USB sets the Wi-Fi and password in the printer, then you unplug USB.
Right.
I think that's what I have to do. The screen is so small, difficult to read, and... So I set up a USB connection to the printer.
Yes.
Right, and then run the HP setup software that either came with the printer or you download directly from
HP.
And
that will let you connect to your Wi-Fi, type in your password, and you should be all set. We got to go.
Thank you.
The first hour is done, but there's another hour of Soundbites coming up with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You have plenty of time during this break to head on over to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button, and keep us all on the air. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Before we get to the phones, again, let me remind you that we are in an emergency pledge drive. We did not make our goal for the year, and that means that we need your help if we're not going to have to make some changes around here. So please, head on over to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button, and give, give, give. Do it now so you don't forget, because I know you'll say to yourself, I'll do it
yeah,
later.
Yeah, later.
And then next Saturday comes up and you haven't done it, and we just have to remind you again. We don't want to have to do that. So make the call. Or no, don't make the call. Make the pledge online at jazz901.org. If you're going to call us, it's with a computer question, because we're not taking pledges here live. And while you make that pledge online at jazz901.org, have I beat that enough? We're going to talk to Chris from Rochester, New York. What's up, Chris?
Hi, friends.
How are you?
The first time I called in when it's not my weekend. And,
I know.
It is the best.
It's great calling in, isn't it?
It is.
You don't even have to wear pants.
We don't normally, do we?
We don't have to wear pants in here either.
I'm not sure everybody knows that. I'm a programmer, and the company I work for is in the security space. And when I hear things like, oh, my antivirus requires me to fiddle with security certificates and change the behavior of my browser, maybe even change the behavior of my network router at home, I actually take offense.
I don't disagree with you even a little bit.
So here's my opinion. I don't think that paying for an antivirus software is worth it. I think your money is better spent donating to Jazz 90.1. Nick, what's the number again? I forgot.
Well, if you're gonna donate, you need to do it online at jazz901.org.
And I did not call in to be a shill for that.
But we're glad you did.
I think it's fair to say that the antivirus industry is really not making any money. And when I see behavior like that, where Norton or McAfee or worse, Kaspersky, are doing something to, it's called a man in the middle attack. All of your traffic. The only real reason they need to do that is that if they are trying to monetize what you're doing, or even more hostile, take over the stream of ads that are being sent to your machine, because that is a real income opportunity for them, which is to replace the ads you would normally see with stuff that they approve and are paid to send you. And so I would uninstall anything Norton or McAfee. Just use the Microsoft Defender that comes with Windows. And then the number one thing for your browser is to use uBlock Origin.
Yep.
That is the secret. And there's a lot of security settings that come with all the different flavors of Chromium these days, like Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, the Brave browser, Vivaldi. Those are all viable alternatives. And they each have their own kind of invasive set of security settings that I personally don't like.
Yeah.
I trust uBlock Origin. And if I want to go the extra mile, at home, I run a thing called a Pi Hole.
Yep. Unfortunately, that's not for everybody.
It isn't. But the neat thing about the Pi Hole is that if you use the Brave browser, you can get basically all of the same functionality built in. So it's another layer on top of uBlock Origin. And all they do is they have a big list of advertising websites with emergent security concerns, that kind of thing. And they prevent your browser from going there. They make it so that my super secret bogus website.com doesn't work. And they make it not work in a way that doesn't break anything else. And that is what you need. You don't need Norton observing every single thing you do on your computer.
Yeah, the vast majority of problems today are fake ads and malicious websites. And so
that's where they're making their money.
That's where they're making their money. There is still a lot of that background internet radiation. In fact, there was an article I just put on our link list. Someone put a brand new XP machine on the internet, and it was compromised in seconds. But Windows Defender can handle all that itself. Apple's got XProtect. People don't realize that Apple has an antivirus and anti-malware program built in because it just sits under there and works.
Right.
And for most of the time, that's unless you are intentionally a risky surfer.
Well, and you know,
we used to joke. The porn sites and the pirate sites is where you got all the viruses from. Some bad guy realized they can buy an ad at the Wall Street Journal, just like anybody else. And now you can go to real websites and get fake ads.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Chris. If you've got a decent antivirus program, all it really needs to do is check stuff that you download.
So have it look only at your downloads folder. It doesn't need to scan your entire drive all the time.
Well, there's that, and there's the fact that you don't need to know what packets I'm sending out. You don't need to know the individual packets I'm bringing in. If I'm using a decent browser with a decent program like uBlock Origin, all my antivirus has to do is check my downloads.
Yeah, and realistically, in the background, the reading and writing that your operating system is doing on your behalf to keep all the moving parts, all the plates spinning.
Right.
The operating system already trusts itself. Right? Like all of those binaries, all of that activity is really, it's security signs. So your antivirus isn't spinning its wheels.
And it has to hook itself in at that low-level kernel, which could cause other problems.
Right.
Yeah, so thinking in terms of like, oh, I only need to check my downloads folder, you just don't have to worry about that. Like it's not eating up your CPU and hard drive.
Right.
Checking all the things all the time. It's just they're smarter now.
Right. That's exactly right. Assuming that you haven't gone in and said, "Oh, I need you to check my entire drive every hour."
Mm. Yeah. If you want to feel like you have upgraded your computer and it's brand new, get rid of your third-party antivirus. Make sure it's completely uninstalled. And then install uBlock Origin and go to the internet. And you will realize that everything is much, much faster.
Yeah, generally speaking, absolutely. It's less of a problem now that we all have much more powerful computers. But it's still a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
The thing you notice is the latency, right? Like the latency of somebody else outside your network trying to help you all of the time makes everything just kind of pokey. And the difference is that it'll be like things just pop up again.
Yep.
All right. That's all I wanted to say. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks, Chris. You too. Yeah. In general, everybody wants to help you do everything. And most of it is unnecessary. As Chris said, when you are on the internet, uBlock Origin does an amazing, and let's face it, Chris is a professional. This is what he does for a living. Okay, so he knows a little bit about what he's talking about. uBlock Origin does an amazing job of keeping your systems fairly clean. There's three components that you need to deal with when it comes to keeping yourself clean on the internet. A program like uBlock Origin, which works in your browser to protect you from most problems. The antivirus program that comes with your computer, which checks only the things that really need to be checked. And your brain. Two of those are easy to implement. But you also have to use your brain regularly, like Jim from Brighton did. He got what he thought was a PayPal hack, and instead of blindly just clicking on something, he thought for a minute and thought, this is probably not real.
Right.
And that's exactly what he should have done. And it's your
don't
brain.
Don't panic. Right. Stop it. Step back and think about it.
Yeah. We joke the more dire the message, the more likely it is to be fake.
Right, exactly. So, again, right now, not by clicking on anything somebody sent you, but by just going to your browser, log into your bank, PayPal, you know, wherever you've got funds, and bookmark those real sites so that when you get one of those error messages, mm-hmm. instead of clicking on anything or calling anybody, you go to the bookmark you've saved that you know is the real site. Log in and see what it says. I will guarantee you it will not say, you've got a problem. Oh, my God. Yeah, call immediately right now. Oh, my God. It'll say everything's fine.
Yeah.
And you can then throw away that message that you got that is a lie. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Jim, what's up?
Well, last week I called in about my problem of having my printer offline, and you gave me a couple suggestions, and yeah. I just wanted to thank you because I was able to fix it, and I was just about ready to call an expensive repairman. But I want to thank you very much for your help.
What did we say? Because maybe that will help Jerry.
You told me to look in the back end, and I actually found a little reset button.
There you go.
All I did was press that, and lo and behold, the blue light started up blinking like a no man.
Yeah. That's what we like to hear. Okay, Jim, so now you go over to jazz901.org and make a donation.
Okay. Once again, thank you very much.
That's your job now. Thank you, Jim. Thanks.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Thanks for calling. We love it when our callers call in and actually thank us. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I missed that one. What happened?
You were asleep. Dave nods off. It happens.
He's taking a phone call.
It happens. Yeah. He was taking a phone call.
Sometimes when you're messing around with stuff, you've screwed it up so much. That reset really helps.
It really helps.
Yeah.
What happened was he called last week about his laptop, excuse me, his printer, and we told him some things to do, and they actually seemed to apparently worked. We're as shocked as anybody, and he's happy. So hopefully Jim will now make a donation to Soundbites, and that'll be great. Go to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button. Before we go back to the phones again, we are in an emergency pledge drive. We did not make our nut for the year. We've only got a week or so left in order to do that, and we need your help. So if you can, please give, just head on over to jazz901.org. Like Jim, if we've helped you and saved you from calling a, and I quote Jim, expensive repairman, then head on over to jazz901.org, hit that donate now button, and give us at least some of that money to keep us on the air and keep us sending you that advice so you can keep not having to call those expensive repair people all the time. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. What's up, Al?
Hey, guys. And I should say, besides saving an expensive repair bill or just sitting in front of your computer simmering in frustration because you can't figure out what's wrong, that is worth something.
Thank you. Yes, it is. We think so, too.
So I've got two for you, one a simple one and one a little more complex. As a fellow Google Pixel phone owner,
yep.
I've noticed that when I do updates, I have a set for manual updates, and I'm averaging 6 to 12 updates almost every day. What is your experience? Is that something I'm getting abnormal, or I don't know what's going on?
Well, it depends on what your apps are, right? Everybody's going to have a different setup because what's being updated are the apps. There was just a big update of the operating system itself, and if you have any kind of Android phone, there's a remote access Trojan or rat going around, and it's been updated. The system has been updated to deal with it, but you need to do that update. And that's a system update. Those are not as common. What you're seeing is the updates to all the apps that you've got. And those are, of course, updated on their own hook. Every company is different.
And the more apps you have, the more often you'll see updates.
Right. So sure. I don't see that many because I don't have that many apps. You may have more and see more. So is 6 to 12
a day
unusual? Not necessarily, depending on how many apps you have.
It should tell you what's being updated.
Right.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. Yeah, like I said, I've got set the manual, and in the morning I'll fire up the phone, and I look and see what's waiting, and if there's anything unusual or of note, such as on my password manager, I look and see what are they changing, what's new. But it's been going on for months. I'll look at something, and I'll say, gee, Google Drive, Google Maps, my bank account, everything, you know, every two or three days.
Right. Well, Google has a problem in that they are a huge target. So they are regularly updating. I have a friend who spent a lot of time at Google Security, and he was telling me about this. He said they hit, you know, millions of attacks a minute. And when they find something that will attack their software, they fix it. And then they download that fix to you. So, you know, let's take Google Docs, right? They fix one and they catch another one. They fix that one. They catch another. They fix that one. It could be you get updated every day. That's actually good because it means that they're catching the
bad
guys.
They're on top of it.
Is it the same update coming back like it failed to install the first time? Or is it a new update number?
No. New updates. Apparently, it doesn't say anything about a retry. They all seem to go through successfully, but it's like, this one happens to be. I had 15 updates a week ago on one particular day. My banking app updated, and it just updated 5 days ago. DuckDuckGo updated 4 days previous and wants to do it again. Firefox, that was a little longer. It's been 2 weeks, so I'll go with that one. But Google Calendar 2 days ago, Meetup 2 days ago, Merlin Birds from Cornell 3 days ago. So that's why I'm just sort of questioning. I could say Merlin the Bird software, which I highly recommend to anybody. I just can't see them doing repeated updates.
Well, so either an update didn't catch or they're in the middle of an attack and they're updating to catch that.
Yeah, and the other thing you can do is go to the Google Play Store and see when that app was last updated. The DuckDuckGo app says it was last updated on June 18th. So that was a couple days ago.
Yep.
Right. But it also says it was updated. It had been updated 3 days prior.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, Aldo, those are not unusual things. What happens is any one program, let's say you only had the DuckDuckGo app on your machine, you would get very few updates. Yep. So you get one every 4, 5, 6 days. That's normal. But you have a second app. Now you get an update every 3 days. You got four apps. You're going to get an update every day.
Sure.
So it depends on the number of apps you have and when they're getting updated. And it also depends on the time of year, to be honest. You know, there are these attacks on systems that require an update come in cyclic waves. And we're in one.
It's graduation season.
Those kids are all getting jobs somewhere. A lot of them are getting jobs in Russia, creating hacks. And so this is the time of year we'll see a lot more updates.
And Chris is pointing out that in my chat that a lot of companies have gone to continuous updates.
Right.
So it used to be, I mean, like Microsoft has their Patch Tuesday. Once a month they release 100 updates. Well, they could release one update. Well, that'd be four updates a day.
Right.
And do it that way. And so a lot of companies will release an update as soon as they have it. And so you might get three updates a month because they had those updates. And sometimes it's third digit. You know, first digit's a major update. second digit's a minor update, third digit's a very small update. So maybe somebody spelled a word wrong somewhere and we made an update.
Right.
Well, we'll just push it out because everyone's got internet now.
And honestly, one of the things I like about Linux is it updates constantly.
Yeah.
Every program updates when it when they find something. They don't wait for the second Tuesday of the month.
Right. So the alternative is to turn on automatic updates and stop notifications.
Right.
But then you run the risk of something bad sneaking in.
Right. So, yeah, you know, you have two choices, as Steve said. And what really should change is your attitude. getting all those updates is a good thing.
If it was the same update number coming in every time, that means something failed.
There's an issue.
And it had to try again.
Sure. Okay. Okay. Well, like I say, it was just sort of a temperature check that I didn't have a phone that was wacko, so.
No, you don't. I get updates pretty regularly. In fact, when I updated my phone yesterday for the BIOS update that was
that's a major one.
I saw that there were other things. I let them update as well, and it all went well. But love those updates. They're good for you.
Okay. So time for my second question. I won't run too long on this. Totally different area. I have a 200-page PDF document that was scanned. Unfortunately, it's a book. Unfortunately, instead of scanning it as text, they scanned it as pictures.
That's how scans work.
No.
Then you OCR it into text.
Yeah, well, they didn't. So I have 200 pages, each with a full-page image of the text, and it's not great quality, which is another problem. But anyways, previously when I had something like this, I would send it into Google Docs. Google Docs would look at the PDF, convert it to text or to Word document or whatever I wanted, and life was good.
Right.
Here, it's seeing it as an actual picture and not seeing it as text. So I'm faced with my alternative right now is to print out 200 pages of pictures, basically, and then rescan it as a PDF text, and then let Google go to town on it. Anyone know of a...
There are a couple of things you can try. You can, if you have, not Microsoft, Adobe Acrobat, you can OCR a document, a PDF.
Any picture, basically.
What? Yeah, any picture. Yeah. There's also an online program called PDF to Go, the number two. So PDF, the number two, Go, that will do that. I don't know personally how many pages you can do.
There used to be one I used all the time called TextBridge.
Yeah.
That you feed it the pages and it tries to read the text. But it depends on how good the text is, on how clean the scan is. Because then you have to go through and spell check everything. We found that a lot of very old pages, it was faster and cheaper to have someone retype it.
Well, yes, and I've been through. I just did that with a 400-page book.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Oh, OmniPage is still available too. I've used that.
Okay. Unfortunately, Acrobat, all I have is the free reader. I don't have the pay software. So
many scanners come with their own OCR software. Sometimes it's Abbey Fine Reader. Sometimes it's Read Iris. So, and those are other standalone programs you can install to read existing picture files and OCR them.
And that's a good suggestion. And unfortunately, also besides being cheap, I'm lazy. So my scanner is a page at a time scanner, and it takes about 4 minutes, 5 minutes a page. So it's
you could install something like Read Iris and then drop the whole PDF file in it.
Yeah, it doesn't include your scanner at all. It's already been scanned.
But the scanner may have come with OCR software on the original CD.
Okay.
So and OCR means optical character recognition.
Oh yeah,
it looks at the picture of text and turns it into text.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, super, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Proven your value once again.
Thank you. Head on over to jazz901.org and drop a few bucks on it. All right. We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, two things. The first and most important one is that we are in an emergency pledge drive. We did not make our nut for the year, and that is bad. That is bad. So if you like what you hear here and on all our other shows, please head on over to jazz901.org and drop a few bucks. Hit the big red donate now button to do that. And guarantee that this station, this show, and all our shows stay on the air. The second thing is we had a little bit more about when Al Mosier called in.
Yeah, he mentioned that he tried to use Google Drives. Google Drive will do OCR to images, but the file has to be 2 megabytes or smaller, and the text should be 10 pixels or higher. So if he's trying to upload a single 200-page PDF, that's probably more than 2 megabytes.
Right, if he can split it up.
Yeah.
Into 2 megabyte chunks.
Yep.
It may do the job for
him. It might.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. What's up, Tim?
Yeah, hi, guys. I need a service that will monitor our Social Security numbers and other compromising info like our credit cards and profiles. I started researching it, and I couldn't find anything that wasn't some sort of a sales pitch.
Yeah, it's just there aren't any.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
So any suggestions would be
probably the most well-known one is NortonLifeLock.
Okay.
Although it has a very bad reputation from people that have had the service, get their identity compromised, and don't get the help that the commercials say they're supposed to. One of the big things is the CEO always says, here's my Social Security number, you know, steal my identity. And his identity has been stolen hundreds of times. Most credit card companies offer that service for you automatically.
Discover is one that's got a real good one.
And MasterCard, Visa, the same thing. I use an app called Credit Karma that monitors all of my credit history. And it's caught a couple of times someone tried to take out new credit in my name. It was my wife, but it warned me.
Yeah.
Like, who's got my Social Security number? Oh, yeah, my wife does. And then the Social Security Administration itself, let me see if I'll post that link too, has a monitoring service.
Oh, wow.
So it isn't a one place to do everything itself.
Shop around.
Credit Karma is probably the single place to do all your credit cards and credit reporting services. Most of your credit card companies have that service already built in, usually in the app you get from that bank.
That's interesting that Social Security does it, administration.
Yeah, they do have a service, I guess you would call it, I guess.
Yeah, fraud prevention. SSA.gov. Fraud prevention.
We'll post that link on our website.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Tim. You too. And head on over to jazz901.org.
And pledge.
The LifeLock got to be so popular, Norton bought them. We joke that semantic is where good software goes to die.
Boy, that's true. So if you have a credit card, it probably already does this. My bank does the same thing.
Fraud protection.
A couple of times I've gotten a call that said, somebody used your credit card number. Did you? My favorite one is, did you buy 6 fur coats in Florida this morning?
Yep.
No. Okay, we'll cancel your card. Come in and pick up another one, and we're good to go.
We get
It's annoying.
Yeah.
But good. I'm glad. I'm not arguing that it was a good thing. It was just annoying.
We have that issue frequently at our shop because people are buying expensive computers, which is not a common occurrence, and so that can raise red flags with the bank. Download the app for your bank. Don't rely on text alerts because text alerts can be spoofed. We had a customer last week that got a text alert from their bank, local Rochester-based bank, saying, "Do you want to approve this charge? Click on this lordvarno.com link and approve it." And they did. Logged in with their username and password, and then they got the two-factor prompt, and they did. So, no.
They're hosed.
So if you have to use text verification, it will be the same number they sent last time. Put that in your address book under the bank's name, but use the banking app on your smartphone. And then there'll be a yes-no right there. It comes as notifications, which are generally delivered secure. You know it's coming from the bank, and it's helpful. It's always frustrating when you're standing there trying to buy something that doesn't work. You call the phone number on the back of their credit card, and you got to get in line for the queue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, be aware that man, the convenience of credit cards hides a lot. And we see that in you know, there's just the machine behind a credit card is complex. And when it breaks at any point, like you've got a huge thing on your bill.
Yeah.
On your credit card just came through. What is that? The machine grinds to a halt until you deal with it.
We were joking once that the boss's identity got stolen, and the police told her not to close the accounts so we can follow them and then arrest them. So you wait until last to get it over whatever the grand larceny limit is. So if you steal a dollar, that's petty larceny. $1,000 and it's grand larceny. So you wait till it gets over that. And so we were watching them. They were in New York City. They went to Tiffany's and bought something. They, you know, went to here and bought, went to there and bought, and it was all fine. And then they went to Dell and bought a bunch of stuff. And that got us really mad.
I know. If they'd gone to Apple, that would have been something. So again, one of the things you need to do, and we're hearing this a lot today, and we hear it because it's all true, log on to your bank on your own, log on to every place you have money on your own, and bookmark those sites. So when you know, I check all my accounts twice a day. It takes me a little bit of time every morning and every evening, but so what? You know,
don't wait for the statement to come at the end of the month and
exactly.
Just pay it.
Oh, that's one thing I did get an email, and I will correct myself because you brought up the point. But back in the day when my late wife was alive, yes, my checking book, her being an accountant did not quite balance because I used to just round checks off. And, you know, if a check was, say, $16.87, it went into my registry as 17. And that used to drive her nuts. Because she said, how the heck do you balance? I go, easy. At the end of the year, I see what I got. Oh, I got a Christmas gift. She used to shake her head. But once she passed, I vowed, and I wound up going to Quicken, and now Money Dance, which is free.
No, it isn't.
Well, for the most part, you can do...
No, if you want to do any of the real stuff...
Yeah, you got to pay.
You pay for it.
It's cheap. But they have a one-time version. It's not a subscription.
Right. It's a one-time shot, and you get lifetime updates, and it's just fantastic. I think it was like $60 or something like that. Yeah. And it was ridiculous compared to what Quicken wanted.
Right.
And all this stuff. But, you know, since that day, I now balance it to the penny. And like you, I'm on it, you know, two, three times a day just to double check, you know, with the stuff going on nowadays. Well, I had one card compromised because they gave me a call and said, we just got this charge from Jersey Mike's, and it's for over $100 and some odd dollars. And
that's a lot of subs.
in Atlanta. I mean, in Albany. I go, well, I'm still here in Rochester. No, that's not me. We thought so. We're shutting it down.
Yeah, and that's easy. You know, your bank will do that. And again, if you don't trust the message you get,
right,
check in your saved bookmark or call the bank with a number on the back or go into your branch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I, you know, obviously if you're going to get a new credit card, they can send it to you in the mail, I suppose. I would rather go into my branch and skip any of that nonsense. And I got my new credit card. What really angered me most was annoyed me most was I had memorized my old credit card number.
Yeah.
Oh.
And now my brain will not memorize
the new one.
Because it's like, oh, it's going to change again, so what do I care?
And you keep typing the old one.
I can't memorize the new one.
The other annoying thing is what services did I have on autopay that are now going to break because that's not the same
card
anymore.
That's one thing you folks should do. If you've got credit cards and you've got them set up for autopay,
even your debit card,
make a list.
Yeah.
Because nothing worse than all of a sudden you're expecting a subscription to renew or this or that or a payment to go through, and all of a sudden you get a delinquent charge.
Right.
Or they shut off your electricity because your auto pay didn't go through.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's, again, that's an annoyance. Believe me, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to do it. I should probably read this this news item because it has a lot to do with what we were talking about earlier. Have you updated the software on your Samsung Pixel or Xiaomi phone recently? If not, you might want to do so immediately. The cyber team at Checkpoint has just issued a new report warning just how big a risk you're taking and urging you to update. The team says it's been tracking the Rafael RAT, R-A-T, remote access Trojan, across the United States, UK, China, Indonesia, Russia, India, France, and Germany, and has detected 120 dangerous campaigns over the last couple of years. Another reminder, they warn of how open source malware technology can cause significant damage, especially when targeting big ecosystems like Android, with over 3.9 billion users worldwide. And this rat is particularly nasty. Definitely not something you want on your phone, sifting through all your personal data, sending anything it likes back to its handlers without you realizing, at least not until it's too late. Our findings, Checkpoint says, highlight that most victims had Google, which is Pixel or Nexus, Samsung Galaxy A and S series, and Xiaomi Redmi series. But many other devices were hit as well. It's crucial to keep your devices up to date with the most recent security fixes or replace them if they are no longer receiving updates. Prominent threat actors are always looking for ways to leverage their operations, especially with the readily available tools such as Rafael RAT, which could lead to critical data stealing, linked two-factor authentication codes, surveillance attempts, and covert operations. So is your phone up to date? If it is, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 800-790-0415. Just head in over to your setup or settings or whatever your phone calls it, and check for updates and get yourself up to date. And
we have so much stuff on our phone. We often call it an extension of your brain. We wish it could have Fifth Amendment protection. So if someone has remote access to your phone, that's your whole life.
Yeah, it is. And then you want to be more careful with that. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Christine from Brockport, New York. Hi, Christine. What's up?
Hi, guys. Question for you. So my son is going off to college, and he just got an HP laptop. And can you give some ideas, a few ideas of, like, the most important things to tell him or that he needs to understand about, you know, like now he has to open up all these, you know, different accounts or this or that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, let's start with physical security. There's a thing called a Kensington lock, and every laptop I know of has a Kensington connection in it.
Apple stopped doing that. We're very annoyed.
You should be very annoyed.
Yeah.
If your laptop has a Kensington connector, get a Kensington lock that will lock the laptop to a desk or, you know, whatever.
It's like a cable.
It just looks like a little hole about a quarter inch wide on the side.
And what that will allow is he can then lock the laptop for when he's not in his dorm room.
Ah, great.
Not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of software, as you've heard, he should be running the antivirus software.
Security Tango.
He should be prepared for a lot of hits on his system. Anywhere you go to college, it's an open network, a million machines, and they are the primary target for bad actors out there on the net. So he needs to have his antivirus up to date. He needs to use something like uBlock Origin when he surfs the web. He needs to be he needs to engage his brain. He needs to be very careful what he downloads.
Revo Uninstaller.
And he needs to understand what he's looking at before he clicks on anything. The second thing is, what software is he going to need? So he should talk to his school about that. And
which depends on what classes, major program.
Right, right. So he should get those from, you know, we're all tempted to find that stuff online for free, but he should buy it. He should buy it probably from the bookstore. Most colleges will sell it to you cheaper through the bookstore.
Yeah, many colleges especially have site licenses to Microsoft Word or Google Docs, and so it's free. Or RIT was $7. It annoyed me.
Yeah,
when it used to be $500 for me to buy it.
Right. So
take a class at RIT, right?
Take a class at RIT. But check with your bookstore. They probably sell the software at a significant discount, and that makes life easier. And be careful of what he up. He's probably going to want games on it, but he needs to be careful where he gets the games. He needs to be careful what he puts on his machine. He needs to be careful who he lets use his machine. And the other big thing is backups. Nothing broke my heart more than a student coming to me and said, my paper, worse, my thesis, is on this thumb drive, and I can't read it. You know, you'd solve this problem if you spent $5 for a second thumb drive and made a backup copy. So backup, backup, backup.
So just a thumb drive is okay, or is an external hard drive?
Both.
Well, yeah, both is excellent. Yeah. You know, the more you have, the better. I'm sure that most colleges provide some form of online backup. So that's one. But he should have his own backup, and that an external hard drive is great, but something that can be disconnected from the machine is also good. So both the external backup, which could be automated so he doesn't have to think about it, that's great. But he should also have a thumb drive so that the important stuff, like his thesis, papers that he's writing, et cetera, can go on that as well, and it gets saved somewhere else. So if, heaven forfend, something happened to his laptop, like he spills soda in it or it gets stolen,
somebody jumps
he's
on
still
his,
got those data.
Somebody jumps on his bed, it bounces onto the floor and shatters.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We've had many of those.
We've seen a lot of those.
Yep. Somebody pukes on it, puts it in the closet for a month. That one was horrible.
Yeah. those are the things to do. He needs to be aware, if he's going to be taking it to classes, get a decently padded backpack or shoulder satchel or whatever he's going to get for that. Although what we see a lot of people doing is their main computer stays in their dorm room on a Kensington lock, and they take a cheap Chromebook to class. But whichever way he goes, that, you know, be aware that it's going to get knocked around, and he needs to have a protective case for it.
And
he's taking it out of the dorm room.
Something like that, you know, a cheap Chromebook or a tablet would have a long enough battery life so he's not jockeying for outlets in the room.
Right.
Everyone clustered around the two outlets in the classroom.
Right. But those are the main things to look for, Christine.
That's great. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you. All righty. Bye-bye.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Oh, and this is a good time to say what we have heard from many, many technicians, including Dave and Steve. The week before classes start, they get a whole bunch of laptops coming in saying, my kid's going to college next week and their laptop isn't working. Don't wait till the last minute. The problem with waiting till the last minute is there's 50 machines ahead of you. You will not have that machine done in time to go back to class. You simply will not.
Our worst one was the plane leaves in 2 hours and we need this fixed.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
No, it's not going to happen. Well, the plane can leave. The laptop won't be on it.
Right, right.
It won't be fixed on it, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from, what is that, Penfield, New York?
Yeah.
Brian, you there?
I am. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I've been listening to the show, and I'm a sustaining member.
Love that.
WXXI. Love the show, guys. But I noticed a theme on security, and I just bought a new Chromebook, and I know that they're fairly secure in general, but what else would you recommend that I do
in terms of security? You don't have to worry about antivirus because they're very difficult to hit with an antivirus. You should be running uBlock Origin, which will protect you from most things on the internet. But with a Chromebook, the most important thing is to engage your brain. Don't click on stuff.
You will get messages saying you're infected with a virus and click here.
Won't be because you have a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Right.
They're lying.
Right. And you get all the same, you know, anything that comes through the web. You have to click here because there's a problem with this delivery. Click here because there's a problem with your bank. Click here. You're still going to get those.
That's just phishing stuff, basically.
Right. And you're still going to get those, so engage your brain. Run uBlock.
Done pretty well so far.
Run uBlock Origin, which will block a lot of that stuff, but nothing blocks all of it.
Okay. Is that a subscription? Do I go out and download the software then?
You go and download the software. uBlock Origin is free.
From the Google the Google Play Store.
You download it from the Google Play Store.
Yep.
And it connects to your browser, so it protects you while you're on the internet.
Wow, wonderful. So basically, be smart and use uBlock Origin.
Don't panic.
Right.
When messages pop up, they're probably lying. Don't panic.
Yeah. Well, that's been a recurring theme today. I got that. So the Chromebook is new. I thought, good to call and check about a Chromebook.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, no, Chromebook works. You know, you don't have to worry about the antivirus, but the other two you do have to worry about. uBlock Origin and your brain.
Yeah. And since all your data is at Google, you hope they back it up. But it's still a good idea to make a copy yourself just in case.
Right. We've talked about takeout last week. We talked about takeout.google.com. Anything you save up there, you can download.
And it's easy to power wash a Chromebook if something does get into it.
Right. That would be at the very worst. But generally, anytime, you know, we've seen people get pop-ups that won't go away, just shut your machine down. Next time you bring it up, it's gone.
Well, sometimes browsers are trying to be helpful and reopen all the windows you had open last time.
Right.
Including the bad one.
Right, but that's not the default. So unless you've specifically changed it. All right, there you go, Brian.
Thank you. So one last quick question. So to be smart, to download documents to a thumb drive, stuff that was important, right?
Yes, always have your own backup, always.
Okay. As always, thanks, guys. Have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, we are done for another week. Great questions this week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray and Chris Horn and Al and everybody who called in. That's great stuff. Thank you all so much. We'll be back next week. But listen, don't wait for next week. Right now, go to jazz901.org and make a pledge. Hit that big red donate now button. We need your money. We need to make our nut for the year. We're short. We need your help. It's that simple. So do that. And we will see you hopefully next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you?